Welcome to part two of our interview with Vincent Carbone about the haunted Morris Jumel Mansion. For you, obviously, I'm assuming there's probably a lot of spirits there. Why don't you talk about that and the identities of some of the more common ones or ones that make themselves known more commonly than others?
Absolutely. So, first and foremost, Eliza Jumel is going to be the most notable one. We've had a lot of activity around her bedroom, especially when we have predominantly women in there. And we, on every investigation, we do an experiment. Because when I first started investigating here, I noticed that there was a spike in activity when it was just mostly women in her room. So what we do on every investigation is we split the group up and we see who we get more activity with the men or the women. Oddly enough, since we've moved her furniture out of her room a year and a half ago to start doing renovations, the activity in her room has actually died down. So there's that. We have a ton of activity in Aaron Burr's bedroom, which would have also been Stephen Jumel's bedroom, Roger Morris's bedroom. We have a ton of activity in there. The freakiest EVP that I've ever caught, that not I personally, but my team has ever caught, that I've ever been associated with, was caught in Aaron Burr's room. To this day, we can't figure it out. We also have a ton of activity in the colonial kitchen, and obviously that would be one of the several servants that were here. Now, it is worth noting that during the Morris era, they did have slaves, but during the Jumels, they did not. And we don't know if that's because if it was a moral compass kind of thing for them, or if it's because Stephen Jumel, being French, his family lived through the Haitian uprising. And so maybe he just didn't want to go through that again. But nonetheless, so that's pretty much the hot spots, is Elijah Jumel's room, Aaron Burr's room, and then the colonial kitchen. With that said, we've had freak encounters all over the house. One of our employees, he's our visitor services director, he's had, on three separate occasions, he's had disembodied voices, one of which even said his name. So there's that.
What are these, you know, obviously we're talking about multiple people here, multiple spirits. Is there any sort of sense as to why they are there? Obviously, some of this, I mean, a lot of this quite actually sounds like it's a conscious haunting. It's not just some sort of repetitious thing replaying itself over and over. It sounds like they're very much active and interactive with the living.
Right. So what you're saying is that this is a highly intelligent haunting as opposed to residual.
Yeah, I guess. I'm curious about, you know, with it being such an intelligent haunting and not a residual, what is their purpose? Do they interact with one another? I know it's two questions, but go ahead.
No, Tony, the answer to that is, if I had the answer, we would solve a lot of problems with this topic, right?
Sure.
I always tell people I've never been dead, so I don't know what they really want. I always talk about contributing factors to haunted locations. You know, you get the Hollywood unfinished business, or their life was cut short. And that makes sense to me. But quite honestly, I just think it's a matter of they being, whether it be Eliza Jumel or the servants, they have a lot of time or money or whatever the case is invested in this location. So it makes sense to me that if they don't know, if it's a thing where they don't know they're dead, it makes sense to me that they would be still hanging around, making sure that we're doing right by the house, trying to get our attention, voicing their opinion. Also, oddly, there's a high spike in activity whenever we have big parties like galas or weddings here, and theatrical productions. We do about two shows a year here, and don't forget, Eliza was an actor, so you know we tend to see a spike in activity right around the time that we open a play. So it could be her way of saying, okay, I'm ready for my close-up, you know, Mr. DeVille. But so I think it's just that they're hanging around making sure they were doing right by the house, which I'm okay with, because none of the activity has ever been, you know, malicious or anything of that nature. So I'm cool with it. Everyone's cool with it. Just don't scratch us. Don't follow us home or anything like that. Also, the other thing that worth noting is that people come here all of the time and they know that Washington was here or Aaron Burr was here. But you got to remember, these guys were only here for such a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, they come here and they say, George, is that you? Or Aaron, is that you? They're not here. If they're hanging out anywhere, it's going to be Mount Vernon or, you know, downtown. They're not going to be hanging out here. Also, with that said, this was a tavern. This was a barracks. This was a museum. This was multiple people's homes. You know, so you're calling out Eliza, Aaron, or George Washington. Meanwhile, there could be thousands of spirits hanging out saying, hey, what the hell about me? Don't I count? You know, so exactly. That could be it, too. That could be their way of saying, hey, I'm still here. I'm trying to get this message across.
Exactly. I mean, people will automatically go to some of the more well-known figures in history if they had touched the building. It's like a hotel where maybe a certain president stayed there one night, and then the rumor is, well, that president's haunting that hotel forever. No, probably not.
But, probably not. But he had a hell of a night there.
Exactly. So it's so interesting. Tell me more about some of your experiences there, some of the more compelling experiences that just really, you know, obviously you didn't need much to solidify proof that this place was haunted, but just some of the more experiences that stand out to you as being quite, I don't know if it's extreme is the right word, but the standout, I guess, is the word I'll use when you're looking back on all the experiences that you've had there.
Absolutely. So, I mean, when it comes to like the scariest or the creepiest things that have happened, so as I said, we do a lot of work here. We do like a lot of, we have a lot of events, and one of those events is we do put on two shows a year. And so I've had it where the most recent thing that I think I've experienced that was just kind of blew my mind was last spring we put on a production of Sherlock Holmes. And for anyone who's ever worked in theater, they'll know the term tech week, which is where you're revving up for opening night. You're integrating all of the lighting and the sound and the costumes and everything. And these nights can go on very, very long. So it was about 3 o'clock in the morning. Cast got home a couple hours ago, but I was still working on some props and last minute things. And I was getting ready to head back to my apartment, and I was sitting in the gift shop at the computer, and all of a sudden, from the Colonial Kitchen, which is that one floor below us, I could hear clear as day someone moving around, like moving stuff. Now, we have caretakers that live on the property, but at that time, the former caretakers had already moved out. So we were kind of in this like weird interim between caretakers. So no one was living here at that time. So I'm hearing all of this like moving around, and I'm thinking that maybe it's one of them. They came back because one of them works for the parks department. She wakes up very early. So I'm thinking, well, maybe she is stopping here before going to work, but it's 3 o'clock in the morning. She doesn't get up until like five. So I go down there to see, hey, what's going on? Because we have had people jump the fence, try to break in, you know, do all kinds of wacky stuff here. We've had people try to break in the middle of the day while we're all in the house. You know, in case you don't know, there's New York is quite a lively place. And this neighborhood in particular, we have a lot of special characters wandering around. It's kind of like Night of the Living Dead sometimes with the drug problem. But nonetheless, so I'm always prepared to rock and roll in case someone's trying to break in. So I go down there, nothing. There's no one down there. And so that kind of really shook me. Now, other experience I've had, again, when I'm in the house completely by myself, is the doorbell will ring completely on its own. And I'll get up, I'll go over there, there's no one there. The freakiest instance of this happening was last employee had left. I was here by myself, cleared the park, locked the gate, came back in the house. I was sitting in the gift shop, and I was here for about a half hour after the last employee had left. All of a sudden, the front doorbell rings. It scared the hell out of me because, oh crap, I locked someone in the park by accident. We always walk around the park and make sure that no one's hiding or anything like that. So earlier in that week, we had an incident where someone made like a Blair Witch kind of like set up in the back garden. It was really freaky. So I'm thinking someone's, because we have had homeless people living in the park at night and stuff like that. It's a great place. You got to come visit. But anyway, so what happened was we had the doorbell rang. I ran over there. I opened it up and there's no one there. I didn't hear anyone running off the deck. And for them to have ran off the deck and sprint and hop over the fence would have been superhuman, almost impossible. So that really scared me. I've had objects moving. I've heard furniture moving when I'm downstairs. I've had lights turn on by themselves. You name it, we've had it. EVPs, as I said, things moving around, all kinds of activity on our equipment when we're doing investigations. So that's my experiences. Other staff members here have had much more significant experiences. One of my favorite stories is the same gentleman that has heard three disembodied voices. One of those instances was he was in the gift shop with another employee, and gate was locked. It was at night. Gate was locked, and all of a sudden, they could hear in the colonial kitchen what sounded like two women laughing. Like all of a sudden, just two women laughing. And then they heard what sounded like one of our 6-foot tables, like plastic 6-foot tables that we have for the education department, just move on its own. And why they knew it moved is because it's got the metal legs and we have a brick floor in the basement. So it was that very distinct sound of brick, of metal scraping on brick. So they run down there. They don't find anybody. They go into the caretaker's apartment. They go into the boiler room, staff kitchen. They text the caretaker and say, hey, did you guys just come in for a second? And they go, no, we're actually out in Brooklyn. So no, we weren't there. Really bizarre. Interesting side note, that was the same night as one of our performances, going back to that. Also, when they stopped and they looked at the room, they noticed that the 6-foot table was in fact moved. It was askew. Another interesting story regarding a TV filming here, being that we're in New York, it's a historical location. We do get approached by a lot of film and television shoots for historic pieces. So this was an episode of Person of Interest, and they were getting ready to film. Now the house, this was the middle of the day, the house was filled with production crew, and I wasn't here at this moment, but it's one of our most famous stories of activity in recent history. They're getting ready to film. They start filming. Director says, roll them. All of a sudden, she says, cut, comes over to the staff and says, hey, guys, we're really appreciative to be here. We really appreciate you guys letting us in here. But could you just let your staff on the third floor know that we're picking them up on our audio? Staff look at each other and they say, there's no one on the third floor. We're the only employees here in the house. Cameramen look at each other like, what the hell are you talking about? They were clear as day getting voices on their audio, picking up audio. So there's that.
Wow. Have you ever had any moments in the house where you just felt uncomfortable? I mean, obviously, when these things pop up, there's got to be a level of uncomfort of like, this is odd. It probably shouldn't be happening, but it's happening. But I mean, beyond just the oddness of it, more so, this just really feels kind of dark, kind of off to me.
Nothing ever malicious, nothing ever evil, okay, which is really fortunate. Yeah. But with that said, I'm often here by myself at night. I tend to stay a bit later, or if I'm working on a project or whatever, I just want to get it done. So I'll be here by myself. And yeah, whenever I'm here by myself, I don't like it, especially when I have to go from the third floor to the second floor and turn off all the lights, because the way that the house is laid out, you could see into all of the bedrooms if you're standing in the center of the second floor. And it's a really, really creepy thing, because when you turn those lights out, you can't, it's just like a pool of just black, of just darkness. And I always envision, as I'm coming around the corner, just seeing something standing just within the light. And that's not something I look forward to. Of course, your mind runs away and plays tricks on you and stuff like that. So I try not to, I try not to think about it too much. It's just a house. Mm-hmm. I've never experienced anything bad, like I said. But it's just, when you go through the history of the house and when you go through all of these stories and the fact that we do paranormal investigations, when you're in the house by yourself, you tend to want to forget about that stuff.
Sure, sure. Has any employee ever called it quits because of the frequent paranormal activity, even though not being anything negative or demonic or dark, but just uncomfortable, just like, this shouldn't be happening. I'm done.
Right. To my knowledge, no. That's not to say it hasn't happened since this has been a museum since 1904.
Sure.
We do have staff members that don't like to go up to the third floor by themselves, especially women. And I'm not saying that in a way of, oh, they're just scared because they're women. I think it might be a thing of they are picking up on something that me as a man, I'm not. So we do have staff members that don't, or they refuse to be in the house by themselves. We have had that. They will not close the house up by themselves. They don't want to be here by themselves, or, you know, they don't want to stay late for a meeting or anything like that because they just don't want to be in the house at night or even during the day by themselves. We actually had our former curator, not that long ago, she would have to open the house by herself. And, you know, we open at 10 o'clock in the morning, so they would get here like around 9:30 just to open the rooms and get the house ready. And, you know, she thought she was clever, and she used to keep her headphones in and listening to music while she was going through the house because she never wanted to hear anything, right?
Sure.
As you probably hear a dog barking in the background. But she never wanted to hear anything. Well, that did her no good because one morning she goes into Aaron Burr's room and she bends down to turn on a light. And right as she's about to turn it on, it turns on right in front of her by itself. And this is a light that we've consistently had issues with turning on by itself. We'll lock up at the end of the day, get out to the gate, and it's back on.
This is kind of a funny question, but when someone is applying for a position or a job there of some sort, is it ever brought up in the interview, are you okay with ghosts? Or do you let them kind of figure that out on their own if they've not already heard the stories?
They, quite honestly, they bring it up.
Okay.
You know, yeah, if they believe in that kind of stuff,
sure.
they're going to bring it up. If they don't, they won't. We don't open the door and say, hey, welcome to Morris Jeremiah Mansion. We got ghosts.
Yeah.
But, you know, what we might say, quite honestly, it might come up in the way of, hey, if you ever want to make extra money in addition to being an educator or you know, assisting in the gift shop, we do have a lot of events that we need staff for, such as our plays, our concerts, our ghost hunts, stuff like that. So they'll find out about it like that. And more often than not, they're cool with it. You know, they're really into it. As I said, it's our most popular event. It sells out every time. And our staff is into it too. So they get comfortable with it after a while if they're not to begin with. But and that's the other thing. When I lead these investigations, I stress a couple of things. One is that, you know, I can't guarantee you're going to leave here any more or less believers in the paranormal, but we're here to talk about this topic, open up the dialogue about what is this thing, you know. Also, nothing is staged, nothing is fake at all, and also, this is not about trying to scare you. We do get a lot of people who come here thinking it's like a haunted house kind of thing or something like that, and I have to let them know immediately, no, this is a hands-on lecture about the topic of the paranormal, and I can't guarantee anything's going to happen. The walls are not going to bleed. I'm not going to levitate. I'm not going to get possessed. You know, if any of that happens, please get it on camera, but it hasn't happened yet. But we just keep it pretty straightforward, and it's a pretty frank conversation. Like, yeah, we have experiences, and we don't play it up any more or less than that.
Oh, this is a good question I like to end on, and this is a very open-ended one. Obviously, this property has been around for more than 250 years now, which is quite something to say about any property in the U.S., obviously more common in that area. But years to come, 50 years from now, 100 years from now, where do you see the property? What's your hopes for it? Where do you think it's going to be? What do you think is going to be going on with it?
Tony, I actually think about that on a daily basis. Not only because of the way New York is and real estate and all that. I mean, we are owned by the Parks Department, so hopefully that ensures that we're going to maintain to be here. This house has never moved. It's always been on the same spot, and I hope that it stays that way. You know, I just hope that there's nothing ridiculous like a fire or something of that nature, and you know, I always imagined coming back here as an old man and saying, oh, yeah, I used to work here at the Morshamal Mansion, and I used to do ghost hunts here. And they'd probably be like, what, old man? You did ghost hunts here? Like, we never talk about that, because it might swing back the other way. You sure. never know. It's all a matter of who's in charge. I just hope that it stays here and that it continues to be what it has been all of this time since 1904 and since 1765, and that it's just, it's a physical reminder of where we've been as a country. And it's such a bizarre thing to see in the middle of this relatively, you know, bustling environment in Washington Heights in Manhattan. It's just this, you're walking and then all of a sudden you stumble upon this giant white house in this big park. And it's a pretty fascinating thing to see. And it's also worth noting that the apartment building directly across from us is called, it's 555 Edgecombe. That's the name, that's the address. We call it the Triple Nickel. And in that building, you had, you know, Horn, Dizzy Gillespie, Duke Ellington, all of these heavy hitters lived over there. All these jazz legends lived over there. My executive director here at the mansion, she lives in Joe Louis's old apartment. Right. So, I mean, that's New York for you, right? But yes. My point is that I just hope that these buildings continue to exist and be cherished and maintained the way we're trying to do now. I just hope that the politics of the city, which are horrendous, don't get in the way and ruin it for future generations.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Vincent Carbone about the haunted Morris Jamel Mansion. A big thank you to Vincent for joining us on the program today to discuss this location. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for supporting the program, and thank you for listening.